Welcome to The Clever Cookster, your window into the kitchens of the world's best cooks. I'm your host, Kara Rota. We have a really special guest today that I'm so excited to introduce. Kara Martin-Snyder is the owner and strategist over at VitalCore, a health and lifestyle studio located at the intersection of functional health, self-care, and strategic action. Additionally, Kara is the host of La Vital Core Salon podcast and the creator of 33K Taskless Project. Kara, thank you so much for joining the Clever Cookster today.
Hey, Kara. Thanks so much for having me. I hope everyone's ready for their double dose of Kara.
So much, Kara. So Kara and I used to actually work together at a tech startup incubator. And when you left, Kara, to start VitalCore, I was really excited to see the work that you were doing because a lot of your work has been really around helping women who are extremely high achieving and successful kind of take a step back and look at where they might be missing opportunities to check in with themselves and build even better habits and happier lives. I know that food and nutrition and digestion are a big part of the work that you do with your clients and a big part of what you sort of start out talking about when you think about well-being. How do food and nutrition play into the life and the work that you've had? And what are some of the things that you find yourself talking about with clients when it comes to food time and time again?
Yeah, food is such an important piece of the puzzle. And you know, the work that I do, I'm looking at things in a really comprehensive way. And when I say things, I mean the pain points that my clients bring to me when we start working together. And a lot of times they're feeling symptomatic or really stuck in a certain way. And part of the initial process I take clients through is really assessing what's going on with certain functional and foundational areas of their health. Things like diet and nutrition, things like rest and sleep and time off, exercise, stress management, and social relationships. And, you know, the way I like to think of it, or I explain it to people a lot of the times, is when you want to be making big change in your life, whether it be personal, professional, if you can't build a house on a foundation made out of Jell-O. So if some of those foundational pieces that I mentioned aren't in place, it's really hard to have the energy and focus to make those bigger changes. Does that make sense?
Absolutely. And I think that people get stuck so often on where to start. It feels overwhelming when you're talking about habits and you're talking about lifestyle and the sort of cycle of negative self-talk and setting goals and then feeling guilty if you don't meet them can be really tough. How do you make eating feel positive and empowering rather than another place where women inevitably feel like they're falling short and then beat ourselves up about it?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's kind of like when you empty out a junk drawer to clean it, right? Like you have to dump all the pieces out and see how they can go back together in a certain way. And so when you think about any of the, you know, especially diet and exercise and things like that, we sometimes see like, you know, kind of the Marie Kondo version of how we want our junk drawer to look like, and it feels a million miles away. And especially with the type A and high achieving women that I work with, you know, we have to look at like what's realistic and we have to look at things with a sense of self-compassion in the process. So I think when it comes to making any changes, like whether it's diet or whether it's exercise, it's really important to dissect why someone wants to make the change and really understand what their motivation is and what's realistic and doable and sustainable given all of the other things they probably have going on in their life, right? And then kind of break it down into little pieces and like focusing on like, what can I do in the next 2 weeks or 4 weeks? What can I do in the next 3 months instead of trying to go from being a couch potato to running a marathon, right?
And what are some of those little pieces or even things that have worked for you as first steps to kind of think about making a change? I know that for you going from working in more corporate finance to working at more of a tech startup environment to running your own business as an entrepreneur, I'm sure that the shape of your day has really changed a lot in those different environments. And women have such a vast array of different routines and obligations, and the shape that your day takes can, I think, really impact a lot of those small habits and decisions around food and exercise and other things. So what are some of the small pieces or small tweaks that have been successful for you or successful for your clients when they're trying to really change a lot about their lifestyle but want to start somewhere small and feasible?
Yeah, I mean, I think the biggest thing is really carving out the space to even start making change or contemplating change, right? Like if you think of the psychological process behind making a change, people have to kind of marinate with the idea of it, then think about doing it and start kind of visualizing it. And then eventually they sort of pull the trigger and start taking action. And you know, for me, backing way up, like I started my career as a CPA working in troubled debt restructuring and bankruptcy in New York. And well, that was where I was based out of, but I rarely saw it because I was traveling most of the time. And so here I was working for bankrupt companies or possibly bankrupt companies and turning situations around. And you know, the irony is not lost on me that I was sort of physically, like from a health perspective, going bankrupt. And behind the scenes, as I was traveling, as I was working all these hours, quite literally, my guts were rotting out. And I was struggling with IBS that was growing increasingly difficult to manage and having to spend all of my time and energy basically triangulating where the closest bathroom was at any given moment. So I was constantly doing those analytics. So the amount of changes I've made to kind of be in remission and be a healthy person from that point, I mean, there's probably 10,000. But I think, you know, when we are at a place that is so painful and chaotic and scary, like that was, the first thing that people really need to do is kind of set the intention that they want their life to be different and that they deserve their life to be different. So, I mean, those are two of the biggest things that I see that have to sort of be in place before any of the actual changes can be made. And then kind of, you know, putting aside time. I mean, for me at that point in my life, it was really like, okay, you know, I think I thought it was my stomach initially, that everything was wrong in my stomach, not really my intestines, or all the other places from mouth to where the sun doesn't shine that could have inflammation and other problems associated with it. You know, for me, just the initial step was going to the New York Public Library and starting to take out some books about human anatomy and just try to understand, like, okay, my doctor's not really explaining to me what's going on nor being helpful, so I need this information from somewhere. And I would just use all the time I had on planes. Like, literally, I would cover the books with brown paper because I didn't want to, like, have the person next to me, you know, wondering why I was, like, reading about the digestive system constantly. It just sort of looked weird. You know, it starts with that intention to change and starting to educate yourself. And that can be as simple as a library card or enlisting, you know, subject matter experts in to help.
I want to ask a bit about what health means to you, because I think for a lot of people, when they're thinking about lifestyle changes, or even kind of small tweaks to their daily habits, health is a really common goal. You know, I want to be healthy. I want to feel better. But for some people, that means, you know, really a huge revamp of everything about their entire life. And for some people, it's like, oh, I need like some new ways to cook spinach. My two ways of eating spinach are boring and old. So I think just like that, with that kind of spectrum, how do you figure out with a client what their goals are and kind of bridge the gap between what maybe they think their goals are? They might think, well, I want to, you know, be kind of this completely other person, and it might not be feasible with the life that they have and the parts of their life that they want to keep. So how do you kind of pinpoint the moving target that is health and help people come up with kind of ways to break that down into actually actionable goals?
Yeah, in 8 years of doing this work, I would say most of the time, and I never know what it's going to be initially, but most of the time when I do an initial session with people, one of the first questions I ask is what are your health and lifestyle goals? And, you know, they might say, I want to have more clarity about what my next job is going to be, or I'm struggling with this facet of health. I know I should be working out, but I'm not. I know I should be eating kale, but I'm not. You know, for me, I'm a synthesizer of a lot of information, and that's where I feel most creatively in flow. So for me, it's about asking a lot of questions and not just, hey, what are you really hungry for? Or, hey, what are your goals? Great. Tell me your goals. Now let me understand why this is important to you. Let me understand what's going to change in your life if we actually can make this happen. And really unpacking things and being very clear with each client and recognizing every human being that I talk to is totally different. And also making sure that I don't make any assumptions. So, like, for example, a conversation I had with a client about exercise, you know, she was like, I'm just not exercising like I want to be, and, you know, really beating herself up over it. And I was like, okay, what's your definition of exercise? And we talked about it. And as we were like unpacking it and like, what would make, you know, as a baseline, what do you feel like would make you feel like a winner in terms of exercising and achieving that on a regular basis? And she was like, what was it? I want to be running 6 to 9 miles a day, 6 days a week.
Wow.
And then, you know, at that point I was like, okay, with everything else you have going on, is this realistic? What are the pros of that much exercise? Like, what are you doing for self-care to offset that kind of exercise? And when we unpacked it and kind of looked at it in a very, you know, I go into the weeds with people. And when we looked at it, where we ended up was, you know, the running, it wasn't so much about the running that distance. It was that she was concerned about gaining weight. So the more running, like, that'll make it better. When we realized if she just made a couple changes on the food side of things and also got some of her socialization in other ways besides hanging out in running clubs all the time, that, like, we could change all of those interconnected pieces and achieve something more sustainable and also more self-compassionate.
The idea of intersections is really interesting to me in the work that you do, because I feel like you really do have this pretty unique ability to look at a person's life and all the things they have going on, kind of physically and emotionally and psychologically and spiritually, and see how those puzzle pieces fit together, see what's not clicking, and see where some of those tension points are. And I feel like one of the things that I believe is that people get unhappy and feel unhealthy when there are those tension points where it's something about the way you're living your life is not in alignment with how you kind of envision or want it to be. What do you think draws you to specifically working with women who are in these high-powered positions? And what are some of the themes around food and wellness that you see cropping up again that you really wish people would kind of look at differently or think about differently? You mentioned that when you were having some health issues, it was really frustrating that doctors couldn't really explain to you what was going on, couldn't really even explain to you how the different parts of your body were working together. And I think that's a feeling a lot of people have about our medical systems, is that we don't really think about that holistic process, how things work together. So how do you kind of help people shift their thinking in that direction? And what are some really kind of tangible ways that people can see those effects?
Yeah, I think a big part, especially when working with the conventional medical community, there's often an assumption, and I don't know where this comes from. I really think it's cultural, and I feel like you and I could probably dissect this for hours if we had the time, where there's this notion of, if I go to the doctor, they are going to fix my health for me. In the work that I do, you know, or the role that I consider myself playing, is sort of being a member on that dream team. Like, conventional medicine has its place, right? Like, if I run my foot over with a lawnmower, I'm not going to go see my acupuncturist. I'm going to head directly to the hospital. And I think you know, we have to look at like the different roles in the whole spectrum of our healthcare. And so for someone like me, I have the time and the space, and I create the structure for people to own their own health. Like, I don't claim to be a doctor. I'm not treating illness, you know, but I am saying to people, like, no, don't hand your keys over to me. You're going to be in the driver's seat, and this is going to be like driver's ed. I'm just going to have the brake on the passenger side, and I'm going to ask questions, and I'm going to be non-judgmental. I'm going to listen to what you believe is happening and what you believe to be true, and I'm going to honor and respect that. And then we're going to kick the tires on it, and we're going to be analytical. And I think that's something doctors don't have time to offer people anymore. You know, gone are the days where doctors would make house calls and know everyone's names and know the family pet and all of those things. And so, you know, we have to understand all those different roles, and we have to honor our own truths and our own sense of wellness, because I know I am blown away, and I've been doing this work for a better part of a decade now. I am always blown away with how much my clients know when given the space to kind of articulate it and think about it and think about how they can make it actionable. Does that make sense? It feels so ethereal, like, as I'm talking.
Yeah, absolutely. And one of the things, just to kind of shift topics a little bit, one of the things that you talked about kind of being in the passenger seat, but having the brake, and people just really needing that support, needing someone kind of just saying, I'm here, you got it, you can figure this out. And I think that's one of the things that I really love about great cookbooks. And that's one of the things that I think people really crave in the space of learning to cook better, feeling more confident in the kitchen, which is obviously a big part of health and wellness. Where do you find culinary and nutritional inspiration, and what kind of advice do you give people who are maybe not so confident in the kitchen but really want to learn to cook delicious, healthy meals for themselves?
Yeah, I think the first thing is recognizing if you can, right? Like, recognizing the gaps. And so for some of my clients who are really busy, really career focused, maybe they're the head of their medical practice or they're the head of their law firm, and, you know, like, they might not have time to be doing as much cooking as they want to be doing for themselves, but there are ways to make healthy choices. So I think first start and figure out, like, are you one of those people who wants to be a cook and has that desire and enjoys it, or is it sort of stressful? And then I think the next level is kind of like, okay, if it's stressful, why? Is this you just don't know how to cook? There's some skill that you're missing. And one of the single greatest skills that I see missing is just having some basic knife skills. You know, I know there's been several clients over the years where when we sort of broke it down, it was they just couldn't cut or chop efficiently or quickly or easily. And that's something, you know, sometimes a YouTube video or a knife skills class at Whole Foods can fix really easy.
That's a great solution, is figuring out the pain points, because there are sort of those things that just make the whole process seem like a drag. And I think we're not always really honest with ourselves about what they are, what it is that feels kind of unnecessarily difficult. And some of those things you can just skip. I mean, if it's the difference between cooking and not cooking, buy pre-minced garlic. I feel like those shortcuts that you can give yourself that gift. What are some of the go-to ingredients and equipment and techniques that you think everyone should have in their kitchen pantry or back pocket? The things that you say, kind of, here's your little shopping list. These things go great in all kinds of meals, or this equipment will come in useful all over the place. What are those things that you tell people they should actually go buy?
Yeah, I'm trying to think of the more common things, because as you can see, I am very exacting to whoever is in front of me in the moment.
Right, which is great. And there are very few things Yes. that I think everyone needs.
So yeah, I think a really good sharp chef's knife and a good cutting board that feels good. like if both of those things match, like that's going to make so much of the heavy lifting around cooking so much easier. I think some of the other things that I go to, it depends on the season. Like in the winter, big fan of a crock pot, which I know a lot of chefs and foodies listening are probably like, oh God. But
no,
for
the crock pot is back. People love the crock pot again, I think.
But for working women, this is an amazing way to make, you know, at least a big portion of a soup, a stew, anything like that, that you can get a couple meals out of or a couple lunches out of and get a, you know, a few meals ahead. That's super handy, especially in the winter. I use mine year round because in the summer you don't have to totally heat up the kitchen. And again, it's just, you put it in and it sort of cooks itself. In terms of other real go-tos, I feel like a grandma when I say this, but again, this has kind of come full circle. I'm a third generation, maybe even fourth generation pressure cooker user. Wow. Yeah, my mom and my gram had the jiggly ones that could still explode. I have at least gotten the one with the safety valve and all that. But a pressure cooker is something that kind of freaks a lot of people out, but is really great, again, especially in the summer when you don't want to really be heating up the whole kitchen, say roasting a chicken. I think these days, like I can do like around a 4-pound chicken for anyone who eats animal protein, I think in about 20 minutes. It's like 18 to 22 minutes. And that's a great way, you know, again, to be, and you can infuse different flavors with it, like drop a little rosemary or a little cilantro in, and it literally permeates, you know, the whole thing. But it's a great way to get just chicken that you can use several different ways. You can make stock, you can use it for soup, you can top salads with it. So I'm always looking for how I can get a lot of meals out of one ingredient or one thing.
Kara, before we wrap up, I want to talk about two of the projects that you're doing that are really interesting, that are Vital Core adjacent, but sort of going a little bit further than your one-on-one work with clients. And the first one is the Vital Core Salon podcast, which I'd love for you to talk a little bit about kind of how that started, the kinds of interviews that you're doing. And then also I'd love for you to talk about your project of collecting 33,000 task lists, which I've never heard anything like that, but I immediately adored it. So.
Yeah. So Le Vital Core Salon podcast sort of came about when I recognized there were women who were reaching out to me that weren't ready to work with me one-on-one. Like the idea of making change was really scary and kind of overwhelming. And also, as I was working with my private clients, I try to honor their process and show a lot of discretion. But I found myself sometimes thinking, oh, I wish my Tuesday at 3 p.m. woman could talk to my Wednesday at 10 a.m. woman, because they would realize they so would intersect on this common point and that they are not alone, because they feel kind of alone, you know, as they were both expressing their pain points. And so the podcast was kind of a chance for me to invite women who are not letting burnout or BS slow them down and ask them about what helps them keep going, what helps them get going. You know, a lot of them are women who have made change or written a book or gone through some big transitional state and are doing some really interesting and positive things in the world. So that's my chance to kind of ask them to come in and pull back the curtain and share what's working well for them. And honestly, so many of the guests have shown up and also shared what's not working well and what they're trying to do to fix it, and really just honor that we are more than the Pinterest version of ourselves or the Instagram version of ourselves, that we're real women with real stuff getting real stuff done. So that's the podcast, and I'd love for people to check it out. They can do that at levitalcoresalon.com. And the other project is the 33K task list project. And I've been doing this work for 8 years, and I work with most of my clients by phone or Skype so that they can eschew a commute to work with me. And I started realizing that productivity and task management and what we're actually putting on our task list and how much women are worrying about it at night and how much that's driving, I don't know if it's and how much it's actually weighing on women and how much energy we're expending to just keep track of what we should be doing instead of what we want to be doing. And most of the work that I do are private conversations and private interactions with people. And I just realized I never made anything with my hands. And the old CPA in me, which was really my first career, loves the idea of this analysis and data collection. And so I started telling my friends I wanted to collect all these task lists and eventually make an art project out of it. And I'm hoping that as I go about collecting these task lists, that I can find ways to talk to women about how we can be putting more things on that list and balancing the notions of obligation and desire in our lives a little bit more.
I love that. And what's the website where people can learn how to submit their list to the project?
Yeah, so everything that I do actually lives at VitalCorps, C-O-R-P-S, wellness.com. So you can access the podcast through that website, and you can read all about the 33K Task List project there as well.
Kara, thank you so much for talking with us today. It's such important and fascinating work that you're doing, and I really appreciate you coming to the podcast to visit.
Awesome. Thank you so much for having me, Kara.
Check out all of Kara's work at vitalcorewellness.com. That's VitalCorpsWellness.com. And tune in next time on The Clever Cookster for more tips and tricks from the kitchens of the world's best cooks.